This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Welcome, all. That's sort of the spirit of our practice. Welcoming everything without resistance or attachment isn't always the easiest. This is my first time giving a talk here, so it's a little ironic to be welcoming everybody when I'm also feeling welcome myself for the first time. I'm not as familiar. I think Seisho is about the only person here whom I've met prior to this weekend, and Nick, I guess. So I think I'm going to go out on a limb and do something a little bit different today than I normally do. And that is, rather than just start and give a talk to people whom I have no idea where you are in your practice or what this means to you, I want to take a moment and ask you some questions and then invite you to let me know what's important to you. I think sometimes I could start and just say, you know, what brought you here today? Why are you here? And of course, there's the literal response of maybe your car or your friends. Are you seeking something? What is that? Jikoji finds itself in this beautiful mountainous terrain in nature, which can be a refuge for a lot of people, especially if you live in a city. Maybe we have stress in our lives related to work or relationships, our own body, physical health or mental health, or something going on with someone we love and care about. Sometimes we refer to this as suffering in some form or another. Maybe it's just curiosity, wanting to see, try something new. So think for a second, reflect. What is it that brought you here? And if you can say that in a word or two, please feel free. Not everybody has to go, but popcorn style. If there's a response that's clear to you, feel free to share that. What brought you here today?
Recentering.
Recentering.
What did she say?
Recentering.
Keep going.
Almost sounds like a devotion. Keep going.
Keep practicing.
Keep practicing. Yeah. Good.
And Seisho, I just wanted to say this book brought me is trying to sit with what I don't know.
Sitting with what we don't know. Yeah.
Not to sound glib, but it's very special. But it's also like other things it's very helpful to have other people in this environment, which means is very helpful in that way. Like the gym a little bit, but not to sound glib.
Spiritual gym.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, thank you.
I have heard silent retreat many, many years ago. Friends of mine always recommend a go some temple to have a silent retreat. So I never had a time until yesterday. So I must have something to do. So I found this temple and this place to explore. I also want to, how to say, settle my mind, because always, every day is just so busy and looking at chaos. I'll never sit down and spend 2 to 3 hours.
So take some time for yourself in silence.
Yes.
To settle the mind. Yeah. Thank you.
To relieve some burden.
Yeah. Okay. Another question I often sit with, it comes up in different times in different ways. And I should say, I just said sit with, because let me briefly say, you know, Zen is often, the Chinese character is translated as meditation, right? But when you look at the character itself, the left side of the character means to point or indicate, and the right side of the character is single, or what I often think of as oneness. So it's a meditation that points towards oneness, that points towards, maybe you could say, wholeness, non-separation. So we often start by sitting on the cushion. We do this on the cushion, and we're encouraged to take this into our life, to take this off the cushion, and to take our practice into every aspect of our life, relationships, work, driving, whatever and everywhere. So we sit on the cushion, and the question that sometimes it comes up, and it's good to bring up many times, is, you know, what's the most important thing? The founder of the San Francisco Zen Center, Suzuki Roshi, in many of his talks, he says in different places something like, the most important thing is, and it's different every time, right? There is no one most important thing. And it's going to be different for each of us at any moment. So staying present with, what's the most important thing right now? Right? And that includes yourself, but it excludes nothing. Right? How do we sit down and take, hold, open our awareness to include everything that's around us, right? And within us. How many here have a meditation practice, a daily meditation? I'll start with just a meditation practice. How many people have a meditation practice, consider themselves meditators? Okay. And how many are mat practice on, let's say, a daily basis? Good, good. And how many of you consider yourselves Buddhist, would identify as Buddhist? And how many would identify as Zen Buddhist? So this is helpful for me to just get a little sense about you all.
Who is a Zen Buddhist?
Who is a Zen Buddhist? That's a good question. I don't know that I could say that. And so the question was, do you identify as that? Which is a big part of our practice, right? Is understanding and looking into who and what we are, which is often who and what we think we are. So what does that mean? Right, to be a Zen Buddhist, to be a Buddhist. I work as a chaplain in a hospital. In the hospital, we do interfaith ministry. So I meet with all different patients of all different backgrounds and beliefs. And even if they come in listed as the same religion, no two people are the same. No two people's beliefs, practices, identities, any of this are going to be the same. Two Christians, they can be completely different in the way they manifest in the world, what they believe and how they are. Same with Zen Buddhists, right? We might both call ourselves Zen Buddhists, but what that means to us, how we embody that, how we practice with that, might be a little different. There might be a lot of similarities enough that we can recognize the similarities and go, oh, this is a Zen temple. I get that. I came into this room this morning to sit Zazen, seated meditation, and I could tell that this was the so-called Zendo, even though nobody told me. I didn't know where it was, but I found it, and I could feel that's what this place, that's what we're going to call this place. And I had some sense of what we would do here in terms of coming in and sitting together in stillness and silence. And of course, what happens on our cushion is different for each of us. Right? What happens when we sit in that stillness, in that silence? What is alive? Who are we? That comes to the fore in the grossest ways, to begin with, gross as opposed to subtle. And the more we sit and the mind settles and the body settles, we start to see more and more subtleties of our conditioning, of our experience. We become less enthralled, perhaps, with, as Paul Haller calls it, the intrigues of the mind. It's trying to suck us in through desire or fear, confusion. And as those start to settle, we can be more and more present and embodied, not necessarily so trapped in our mental processing. Which is a way in which we tend to suffer. So I want to, before I talk more, give you an opportunity. If there's a burning question, there's something about Zen or Buddhism, I can tell you, let me just briefly say, so I already said I work as a chaplain. I'm a father. I have an 11-year-old daughter and a 16-year-old son. I served two tours in the United States Peace Corps in West Africa and Benin for 39 months and in Namibia and Southern Africa for 15 months. Those travels, my parents were employees for United Airlines, so I got to travel to Asia. And that sort of first brought me to Buddhism. But then when I started to meditate on my own, I came across the importance of Sangha, which is what I think you were talking about. Wanting to come, we talk about the three refuges of Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Sometimes we call them treasures. Right? The treasure of Buddha, which means awakeness, the one who is awake. And that Buddha, that awakeness is here. It's not anywhere else. It's as alive right here, right now, as it was in Shakyamuni Buddha, Siddhartha Gautama's time. Right? Can we take refuge in our own present moment awareness? Take refuge in the Dharma. Dharma is often with a capital D, as we say, when we take refuge in the treasure, it's in the, we understood that as Buddhist teaching. It means also the truth. And you can ask yourself, can we take refuge in the truth of this present moment? What is the truth of this present moment? How do we take refuge here? now, the truth of this moment. And to take refuge in Sangha is to come to, come back to the community of practitioners. It can be a support to sit together in silence, to meet together and to share our practice, what that looks like for us. Sometimes it's sharing in the joys. Sometimes it's sharing in our struggles, right? But there is support in doing this together and coming together. There's a different kind of relationship that is built that's not there to necessarily always build us up no matter what, to tell us everything's okay, but to speak truth. And it's okay if things aren't always perfect, right? If we don't experience it as that. Is there anything alive in your own practice or that brought you here that you want to ask about today? Please say your name first.
Todd.
Todd.
Recurring theme for me, it seems to be, is...
And try to make it succinct, sorry.
Yeah. So, two natures seem to be of nurture and destruction.
Cool.
And it's the top of the list for me.
What is it about those two natures? The nature that wants to destroy and the nature that wants to nurture? Is that what you're saying?
I don't have an answer.
Okay.
But especially, you know, with recent events, or always been, always been destruction, violence, hostility, anger, fear, always have been. And these go out from there.
Thank you. What else? Anything else? Yes.
My name is Veronica. The question, what is the difference between Zen and spiritualism? What the relationship of those two?
The question again?
What is the difference between Zen and spiritualism? Mm-hmm. Will you define spiritualism?
I don't know how to define.
Okay. What else? Yeah. Can you say your name first,
please? John.
John, thank you, John.
I think meditation and mindfulness, Zen, Buddhism, have all helped a great deal with responding wisely to the more drastic or stronger emotions, which is a lovely thing. What I'm curious about and interested in is responding wisely to the more subtle, the quieter whispers that maybe aren't such a big deal in the moment, but over years or a long period of time could sort of change the outcome of one's life. So just really bringing it in, bringing mindfulness and attention into the more subtler things that aren't as obvious.
Thank you. Yes.
My name is Zen.
What is it again?
Zen, Z-A-N.
Zen.
A question is, how do you balance the non-attachment with the still a strong desire to accomplish?
Okay. Thank you, Zen. Anything else alive? Particularly for anybody? Yeah, Nick.
What is enlightenment, and what does it have to do with our practice?
Okay. Maybe one more. Anything? Well, that's perfect too. So, these are good questions. Sometimes there's a risk, right, in answering questions, because then we think it potentially kills it. And we go, oh, good, I got the answer, and it's done. Whereas, like any good koan in life, it is about keeping it alive and engaging with it and chewing on it and finding those answers for ourselves. And of course, I can't necessarily answer your question, but we can have a discussion. I can open it up and we can talk about how it is for me. And maybe you can think about and talk about how it is for you. First and foremost, Buddhism is a practice. Okay? It's not about dogma. There are lots of teachings. There's the Bible, and then in Buddhism, there's like this is one volume from the Pali Canon. This is the third, right? And it's several thousand pages, and this is just one of many. And of course, there are lots of teachings from the Mahayana tradition that came later in China and Japan. There are lots of contemporary teachers teaching in the United States and all around the world. But it's not about philosophy in the sense of just sitting around and thinking about it. A friend of mine once called me an armchair Buddhist when I was in my early 20s, mid-20s. And it was really helpful because I realized that's not what I wanted to be. That's not how I wanted to do it, right? It's really about taking these teachings, these practices, and engaging with them for yourself, investigating them for yourself. So we have these words like enlightenment or awakening. In Buddhism, we also talk about emptiness. We talk about the two natures of relative truth, the conventional, which is how most of us come to practice. We come from a place grounded in conventional reality. We look around and we experience the world through division, through a sense of division. We name things. If we don't have a name, we often wonder what that is. Who do we call it? How do we put our finger on? How do we cut it out and define it? But in Zen and in Buddhism, we would say fundamentally, there is no separation. Sometimes lately, I think about, you know, when we listen to sound, it's similar with sight as well, but in some ways it's easier with sound. Really, there's just one sound that we hear. But our mind has been trained to cut it up and to think of it as maybe motorcycle in the distance or somebody named Shogun's voice, sound of a creaking chair. Right? We look around and we see and we perceive separate beings. We think Nick, right? Zafu, Zabutan. This is the conventional. We go through our lives this way with all these ideas about ourselves as well, right? We have a name, Veronica or Zan. And when somebody calls that name, we respond. We've been trained to. And yet, who is Veronica? Who is Zan? What is Veronica? What is Sam? So practice, I would say, is starting to see the ways in which we create separation, the ways in which we separate ourselves, the ways in which we separate ourselves from, Suzuki Roshi called it big self, from what is it that's beyond this little self. So as we do this, we start to see more and more subtly what's going on for us and what our so-called truth is. And maybe that's, I shouldn't even say maybe, that's not, but again, we're encouraged to look and see for ourselves. All the Buddhist teachings, the point is to verify them for ourselves. We start from a place of faith in some degree, right? We talk about emptiness. The chant that we chanted this morning in the Heart Sutra said something about form is emptiness and emptiness is form. And by emptiness, we don't mean nothingness or voidness, but we mean empty of inherent self, of a permanent being. Sometimes we call it own being, right? And we often think we have our own being. I thought about doing an exercise this morning, but there's not really gonna be time. But I've done this recently where if you ask yourself this, if somebody asks you, tell me something about you, we can say all kinds of things. I can tell you my name. I can tell you my roles. I can tell you my relationships. I can tell you my preferences. I could share my thoughts and my feelings. But these are all ever changing. I could state my so-called race, my so-called gender, my so-called sexuality, my physical abilities, right? But these are all changing. They're not, they haven't always been and they will not always be. They are in a very real, ultimate sense, empty. So we come from the relative seeking something with this faith that in the bottom, it's all empty. But what does that mean? And how do we not, how do we get a taste of that? And how do we not get stuck in that? Sometimes that doesn't sound like we want to taste that. We might have fear come up. Often when we experience emptiness, fear can be a very strong response or aversion. And the practice, this gets back to the non-attachment that you were talking about, Sam, is about, like I said, it with this welcoming, allowing ourselves to be with what is without trying to control it, hold on to it. So when things feel good, we just enjoy that it feels good, but we don't try to cling to it. And when things come that don't feel so good, we try to honor and be with that as well, without clinging to it, but with also without pushing it away. Life continuously presents us with both of these over and over. And actually, that's not quite the right way to put it. It's not that life is presenting us with pleasant, unpleasant things. Life presents us with experiences continuously, and our mind experiences them as either pleasant or unpleasant. The same thing might be pleasant for you, might be unpleasant for me. So non-attachment is, in a sense, at the core of our relative practice, right? The more we see into the emptiness, the easier it is to not cling, to let go. And letting go is not pushing away. It's allowing ourselves to be present with what is. And often non-attachment can be non-attachment to outcome, which doesn't mean we don't necessarily have goals, that we don't sit down with some hope of tasting emptiness or enlightenment, but we're not doing it. We don't cling to that. We receive what comes. We receive this present moment over and over. We take care of ourselves and this body. So if what comes is unpleasant, it's okay. You know, if we need to adjust our posture when we're sitting still for 40 minutes, by all means, you know, take care of your body. Only you know when you need to go to the bathroom or when you're hungry, right? So there is this need and response to take care of ourselves and to look around our environment too. If somebody is suffering, by all means, join them in that. Compassion means together in suffering. Christians know this passion from Christ, right? The passions of Christ in the desert was the sufferings of Christ in the desert. Calm means together with. So we meet what is. If there is suffering, then we meet that suffering by holding hands, by coming and spending time, by opening our hearts to ourselves, to our own suffering, to the suffering of others. And we try to take care. If we can do something to alleviate it, then we do. We might ask, what do you need? What's being asked of me here and now? But not from the place of necessarily needing to fix or being attached to trying to make it be some particular way so that I can feel good about myself, but rather just because we're meeting the moment and the need in the moment. And this gets a little bit, Todd, to your question of nurture versus destroy in our natures, right? Sometimes in Buddhism, it's more prevalent in, there's a Tibetan image of the wheel of life. It's got Yama, the god of death, holding it, right? And the 12 images are on the outside that each represent the different links in the 12-fold chain. And then there are six realms inside of that. And in the center, there are these three animals, a pig, chicken, a rooster, and a snake. And these represent greed, hate, and delusion. This is, I think, this nature that, I don't know if I would say, I hesitate to say nature, but let's say tendency. We have a tendency to come from a place, when we come from a place of separation, then we feel greed. And we feel hate. And that is the fundamental delusion, is that there is separation. So what is it that wants to nurture? What is it that nurtures? What is nurturing? And that's a good question. Yeah.
I practice Orioki. Mm-hmm. So food mm-hmm. is out here.
Mm-hmm.
Then I eat the food. Then it's in here that I excrete. So no separation. There is a separation. I have a nervous system, so I don't chew my face off when I start eating. Mm-hmm. So it's this one area I'm a little.
So no separation in this sense. Think of it as everything is conditioned. Nothing exists on its own, independent in the universe, mm-hmm. independent of everything else, right? You exist, your body exists in dependence on the food that you eat, on the air that you breathe, the water that you drink. There were studies unintentionally, in some ways intentionally, some ways unintentionally, done with little kids at different times. There was, I can't remember, it was a pope or a bishop who wanted to learn the language of God. So he took all these kids and isolated them and said, don't speak to them. And we'll see the language, we'll see what they speak on their own, never having heard a word. And that will be the language of God. So these children were not spoken to, and a lot of them ended up dying, way more than we would have expected. Similarly, when we got this idea of germs, all these kids were getting sick in, I can't remember, it was the 40s or the early 20th century, the 19th century, and they stopped, all these nurses were told not to touch these infants because they might have germs, and they stopped touching these infants, and they had a much higher mortality rate. So even language, talking to babies, touching each other, holding, taking care. There's so many ways that our life depends on. So by non-separation, I mean we do not exist separate from the universe around us. You can see that food is separate, and you can see the excrement as separate. And yet, it's all connected. So it's not to say that there aren't differences. This is sometimes we talk about the harmony of difference and equality, of sameness and difference. So there are many differences in this room. We all have our own experience. We all come from our own background. And yet, in the deepest, in the ultimate, there is no difference. There is no distinction.
Semi-permeable membrane.
That's, again, a conventional designation. Yeah, so the mind wants it to come up with words to describe it.
Yeah.
And it's undescribable. It's untouchable. The ultimate. So Zen and spiritualism. I'm not quite sure what spiritualism is either. But so it depends on what you mean by that. I think.
You know, I heard some energy level to describe it as spiritualism. I don't know.
So Zen, I would say, is very much just about meeting the moment here and now. It's meeting our life as it is in the present moment, moment after moment. There's a certain amount of courage and fearlessness, right? Not turning away. But there's also knowing when to take care of ourselves and when to take a break. Sometimes with grieving, we need to honor that, but it can be overwhelming. Sometimes we need to take a break when we feel overwhelmed. And nobody can say what that is, when that is, and how to do that. Right? For somebody else, we have to find that for ourselves. So we're finding our truth. Finding the truth of this moment and taking care of it the best we can, compassionately. Anything else? I think we're getting close to, it must be about lunchtime. Yes.
I've been thinking a lot about love, or I've been feeling a lot about love.
Yeah.
And love doesn't come up very often in our discussions.
Yeah, love is a good one, and it's interesting, right? Because it gets back a little bit to what do we mean by that, by love? There's a sense of love that, you know, media portrays, that we get from stories and from movies, that we think love is supposed to look some particular way. And this is mostly around romance, right? And yet there is love that we feel between our siblings or our partners or our parents or our children, right? And that's a very different response. When we come to embody more and more this practice of non-separation and understanding that, then that love can flow much more easily in all different directions. Sometimes I think of love, you know, we talk about the Brahma Viharas sometimes in Buddhism. You heard of the Brahma Viharas, the heavenly abodes? So there are these four practices, sometimes considered boundless. The first is loving kindness. Okay. The practice of loving kindness. And again, from the conventional perspective, for self and for other. Right? How do we practice loving kindness in our actions of speech, in our actions with our body, and with our own mind? Can we recognize when our thoughts are not particularly loving or kind to ourselves or to others? This gets back to a little bit the destroy. sometimes it can be good to cut off unwholesome habits. When we find ourselves speaking unkindly to ourselves in our mind, telling ourselves we're not enough, shaming ourselves, doing that with others, these can be good habits to uproot, right? The next is compassion, which again is this meeting suffering. When suffering is present, then we meet suffering with compassion. And that can be hard, especially if we can't do it with ourselves. If we turn away from our own suffering, then how can we join others in theirs? Right? So we start with ourselves. And the more we can be with our own sadness, with our own fear, with our own sense that we're not enough, whatever it is, and we can look into that. Is that true? Is that really true? Right? And we start to see through, that's just some belief, some idea. It's impermanent. It's not who we really are. Then we can start to let go. And then we can start to be with others in that space. Our own sense of fearlessness and ability to be with them in their suffering. When there's joy, then we meet it with sympathetic joy. That's the third Brahma Vihara, right? So celebrating with others in their joy. And yet so often, again, because we create self in others, sometimes we're not. It can be hard to be happy for somebody else's success if we somehow think that it's not ours or it's in opposition to ours. But how can we open our hearts to the joy of others and let ourselves feel our own joy? Right? Sometimes we might think, oh, I don't deserve this, or I don't get attached. Attached, but enjoy it. While when joy is here, by all means, enjoy it. Be that joy. Share that. Offer it freely. And the last is equanimity, which gets back a little bit to this balance, right? Of meeting whatever arises in a way that, you know, you talked about, was it John? That these gross emotions can sometimes really start to knock us and pull us about, right? Whether it's like when we start to feel in love with something, when that comes up, we can like, oh, rush headlong because we're coming from a place of intense desire, often because we think there's something lacking here that's going to fulfill. We don't recognize our own inherent wholeness in that sense, right? Or anger or fear can be big, strong emotions that can knock us off. And yet the Bodhisattva of compassion, Avalokiteshvara, is often represented as in this very peaceful posture, standing on the back of a writhing dragon. And it's sort of like surfing and not turning away from. How is act of love, again, which comes back to meeting what is, honoring the truth of the present moment. To me, that's an act of love. And I hope that responds. And then, John, I would say just keep listening. You know, as you get more subtle, what is it that is asking for your attention? What needs your love? And how do you take care of that and embody that and bring that? How do you bring that forward without a sense of attachment? I'm going to be whatever. And we do. And can we be easy on ourselves? Yeah, I wanted to be a good father. And I have a teenage son who is very good at pointing out my shortcomings over and over. It's very humbling. And if I'm not careful, I get angry. My amygdala gets triggered, gets hijacked. It's hard. So if you can get to the subtle stuff, good. Watch. It's a mystery. I think our names kind of say it all, right? My name Shogen. Sho means to illuminate or luminous. Gen is mystery. So we illuminate the mystery in our Zazen. And Oshin is to respond with the heart mind. Shin, this character in Chinese and Japanese, means both the heart and the mind. We often think of the mind as just being up here, but the Shin, it's embodied. The mind that's embodied, it's the heart that discerns. So we're not just here. Our practice is very much embodied. There is wisdom in the body. And as we listen and pay attention more subtly, we start to see and trust more and more. I hope this is helpful in your practice and encouraging. I'm sorry I haven't spoken to anybody. I'm not sure who's online. I can sort of see some faces over on the side. Is there anything else before lunch?
In your talk, we talked about a little bit about the essence is empty, or it is, there's no self in that sense. And so, like, from where we are, we see there's like this clear duality that we observe, like in day and night, in good and evil, male and female, life and death. So there's this clear,
the relative, the conventional, you know, yeah,
it's like so there. And then you also mentioned the harmony of difference and quality.
Mm-hmm.
So could you point to this harmony? Because it feels like it's so clear that this is male, this is female, this is good, this is evil. Could you point to that harmony of this?
So there is this honoring of the differences. So it's not pretending that everything's the same. It's not ignoring our differences. There is, in a sense, a deep respect for all the differences, right? If we don't respect that hemlock will kill us if we eat it versus dandelion greens or some other green, they're quite different outcomes. So we don't deny that there are... So we do... try to honor them in a sense. Right now I want to say as equally valid. Everything is equal in value. Fundamentally, we're all equal value. Everything's equal value. And we all bring something different to the table. Suzuki Roshi used to say, you're all perfect just as you are. That's the ultimate. And you can use a little improvement. That's the relative. It's really important not to get stuck in one or the either, but to honor them both. So we might even say that. This is the relative, this is the ultimate, this is Zen. Right. So we're simultaneously, as much as possible, recognizing the relative. We're not losing sight of it. We're not walking through the world in front of buses or down the freeway. We'll get ourselves killed. Or indiscriminately killing others because there's no beings and there's no life. So it doesn't matter what we do. That's not it either. That's sometimes nihilism, right? So Buddhism and Zen it's really important to understand the emptiness of everything. And it's equally important to recognize the relativity and to be able to honor both of those simultaneously. And how that manifests in you, in your experience, is going to be completely unique. But it is important to, I want to say hold, but not in the sense of grasping, but try to stay in touch with both of those. Don't get lost or attached to one side or the other, because if you get stuck to one side or the other, there will be suffering. Simultaneously honoring both. And that is where we find harmony. That's what I'm going to say at the moment. The bell happened for lunch.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.